Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2020 first quarter results conference call and webcast. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique et à la webdiffusion des résultats du premier trimestre 2020 d'Innergex Énergie Renouvelable. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulty hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I'll now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. A presentation supporting today's discussion is available as we speak on the homepage of our website at www.innergex.com. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as at the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to international financial reporting standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the MD&A for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Jean-François Annaud, Chief Financial Officer, who will present Q1 results, and Mr. Michel Letellier, President and Chief Executive Officer, who will review our operational highlights and our Q2 priorities. And I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Annaud.
Thank you, Karine. Hello, everyone. The variation in our first quarter results over the same period last year stemmed mainly from the commissioning of the Phoebe Solar Project in November and the Ford City Wind Project in September. Production and revenues were up 28% and 5% respectively. Adjusted EBITDA was down 3%, while production proportionate, revenues proportionate, and adjusted EBITDA proportionate were up by 24%, 11%, and 9% respectively. Before going further, I'd like to stress that 2019 figures are reported on a continued operations basis, which excludes HSRCA. On page 8, production for the three-month period ended March 31, 2020 was 28% higher due mainly to the contribution of the Ford City Wind Farm and the Phoebe Solar Facility commissioned respectively on September 27, 2019 and November 19, 2019, and to higher production in France. These items were partly offset by lower production at Quebec wind facilities. Contribution from Ford City and the France wind farms were offset by lower production at the Quebec wind facilities. In hydro, lower average price and lower production at some Quebec facilities more than offset higher revenues in BC. On next page, adjusted EBITDA decreased by 3% due to the lower contribution from the wind segment, where lower contribution from the Quebec facilities entirely offset higher contribution from the France facilities and the Ford City project in Texas. This decrease was partly offset by the solar segment due to the commissioning of Phoebe project in Texas. The 9% increase in adjusted EBITDA proportionate comes almost exclusively from the 10.9 million PTCs generated by the Ford City Wind Farm following its commissioning. Here, let me remind you that production tax credits of US$25 per megawatt hour generated by the project is recorded as other revenues under IFRS and are applied as a reduction of the long-term debt since the tax equity funding was characterized as such under IFRS instead of non-controlling interest. Now, continuing on page 12, the $418 million decrease in long-term debt is mainly due to the net repayment of $466.1 million of the corporate credit facility from the proceeds of the investment by Hydro-Québec in Innergex common share. Scheduled principal repayments on long-term debt and tax attributes allocation, partly offset by unfavorable foreign exchange rate. On the next page, changes in the total assets stem mainly from the increase in property, plant, and equipment due to Hillcrest, the weakening of Canadian dollar against the U.S. dollar and euro, and the decrease in derivative financial instruments mainly related to Phoebe Power Hedge and Basis Hedge. Change in total liabilities stem mainly from the decrease in long-term debt. The change in shareholder equity is explained by the private placement of 34.6 million shares from Hydro-Québec. As shown on the next slide, the free cash flow available for distribution has decreased by 27.6 million on a trailing 12-month basis. The adjusted EBITDA on a consolidated basis remained relatively flat despite the acquisition of Cartier and the commissioning of two new projects due to lower generation from unfavorable weather conditions. This fact, combined with the increased debt service payment in the trailing 12 months ended in first quarter 2020 compared with the trailing 12 months ended first quarter in 2019, in part due to a payment holiday in Q4 2018 on the new Cartier financing, contributed to the decrease. The decrease were partly offset by the decrease in free cash flow attributable to minority interest and by the one-time recovery of maintenance capex, both stemming from the HSFCA disposition. On next page, we are proud to announce that we have closed on May 7, 2020, the Hillcrest financing. The total construction costs are estimated at $279.5 million U.S. dollars and will be partly financed through a U.S. $82 million construction term loan and a U.S. $109.8 million tax equity bridge loan provided by a group of lenders. Innergex will fund the remaining U.S. $87.7 million equity commitment. At commercial operation, a lender will provide the tax equity investment to be used to repay the tax equity bridge loan. On that note, I will give the floor to Michelle for the operational review of the past year or the past quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean-François. Good morning, everybody. If you go to the WebEx, we're going to start with the corporate development. Obviously, a busy first quarter. The first very positive aspect is our strategic alliance with Hydro-Québec. Very proud of being a partner with Hydro-Québec, and we'll talk a little bit later what would be the benefit. But it definitely helped in the pre-crisis to have this injection of capital. It put us into a very solid capital position, and we will be taking advantage of these favorable liquidity in order to take opportunity down the road. We'll come back to those. So thank you again for this great potential partnership, not potential, but partnership with Hydro-Québec. I'm very, very happy. Of course, the first quarter was busy given the COVID-19. As you all know, we're in the middle of the crisis. We're very, very thankful that our industry has been put into essential services. So that means that all our plant have continued to produce the electricity, and I'm very thankful for all of our employees that have been very proactive and resilient in their ability to sustain our operation while this crisis was unfolding. We also had all our employees in the office working from home, and a big thank to our IT teams that put together the system and provided all the equipment and the formation for these people to be able to be efficient at home. I must say that it changed the way I have see the work from home. I was a little bit skeptical at the beginning, but boy, it shows that we could still be quite efficient. And again, we've been able to produce all the financial documentation and all the audited financial statement for all our subsidiary. So a big thank again for the employees that have worked hard, and given the circumstances, not so easy also working from home with the kids that are around. So I'm very thankful for all the employees being so dedicated, and we are looking forward to continue this this situation for a while. Our policy is not necessarily to rush people to the office. We want to make sure that we're going to take our time, and that when people are going to come back to the office, it'll be safe and efficient to do so. Again, our electricity is sold under long-term PPA, so we have confidence that these PPA will be honored by all our customer. So we are thankful for this situation as well. Now, we're also very mindful of the distress that this crisis has created also in some area. We have initiated a campaign to support some of the initiatives that the local community have brought forward, and we have also worked with our communication team to redirect some of our economic commitment that we have done in the past, but maybe having a little bit of a different angle to make sure that these money would serve to take care of the urgency that the crisis has created. So again, we're very, very thankful for being in the industry that we are, but we're also mindful that others are suffering, and we want to share and be a good corporate citizen. So if we switch the other page, the operational highlight, we have continued developing our two projects in Hawaii. And as you've seen yesterday, we were really pleased to be selected for final negotiation on the PPA. Just want to make sure that people understood it's the same system as the last RFP. So we have to sit down with the utility and finalize the language behind the PPA, but we have won the right to sign those PPA. So typically it took about 3 months last year to finalize the PPA. So I imagine this year will be similar, but given the fact that the last RFP was the first of a new wave of PPA having solar and battery together. So it was a little bit the groundbreaking around these PPA was I guess negotiated last year. So I don't see big issue this time. I think that the PPA we have negotiated, or the industry or the player had negotiated last year, should be the base to basically negotiate the new ones. So pretty happy in the sense that we have said, and we'll reiterate that later on in the presentation, that batteries and stockage, storage, thank you, is very important for us in terms of strategy. And we have now 80 megawatt in development in Hawaii, and we also have a 9 megawatt in France that we have won with RTE. So it's we're getting very close to 100 megawatt of development for battery. So it's a beginning. I think that we are going to see a lot more activity in that sector in our industry. Also, we have finalized the documentation and the negotiation for the Yon 2 extension. Not a big project, like I said yesterday, but it's the first one of hopefully a lot and many new project in France. It was developed by our team in France. So it's three turbine basically that we are going to put into our existing Yon facility, and also it's the same substation where we are going to install the 9 megawatt battery. So this is basically the first project that we could develop or have the opportunity to put into construction in France. We were planning to start a little bit earlier this spring, but given the COVID-19 crisis, we are expecting to break ground somewhere in June, and still hopeful that we could finalize by the end of 2020, but to be a little bit more conservative, we're calling COD for 2021. On construction site, we have been very active in Hillcrest. As Jean-François mentioned, a big win is our ability to have finalized the financing. Must say that it was not an easy process, given the fact that we were doing it in the peak of the crisis, and of course, a lot of questions from the independent engineer came up on our ability to deliver the COD by the end of the year. But I'm very proud of our team, construction and engineering team followed the independent engineer question, and we were proactive also to secure some component that might have been put into a waiting list. So we have secured all the supply, the panel and all the other supply needed to finalize the construction, and we're very optimistic to finalize this project by December this year. In Quebec, the small project, the Inavik, the small project hydro facility in the north, is a little bit more complicated in a sense that the area is very vulnerable in terms of it's an area where people are isolated, and the government has closed these area, so we don't know exactly when we will be able to start construction this summer. We might be able to go and start slowly by the end of the summer, but of course we will be following the government guidelines in order to go and start being in that area and traveling. And of course, we want to make sure that the village stay healthy. If we switch page, what are we going to focus on Q2? Of course, Hillcrest will be at top of the line. There's a full crew over there. We have roughly 150 workers on site. At the peak, we are forecasting something close to 300 people. So it's going to be a busy construction site. And the our contractor and our team of construction are making sure that it will be also a safe working places given the guidelines by authorities. regarding construction, but we're very optimistic that we'll be able to be efficient and, like I said, deliver the COD by December. We'll also, like I just said, we're going to start construction on Yon, and we are going to use Intercon as a full EPC contract. We're about to finalize the contract, and they should, like I said, start mobilizing on site by June. In terms of development, we are, of course, working on our project in Hawaii, and the new one will also be top of the list to start initiating all the permitting and the community consulting. It might be a little bit of a challenge consulting community given the COVID-19, but we'll be creative, and I'm sure that our team will be able to reach out the communities. We also are working hard on solar project in the U.S. We are working in Texas, as you know, but we have also said that we wanted to be present in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and I'm glad to report that we have now secured at least enough land to produce two projects in that area in PJM of at least 100 megawatt each. So the team has been a little bit slowed because of the COVID-19, but they will be working hard during the summer to extend these land to make these projects a little bit bigger, and perhaps adding two more projects. So the goal is to have roughly at least four projects in that area. We want to continue developing in France, wind and storage. Storage, you've seen that we have initiated the strategy by participating in the RFP for capacity and 1.9 megawatt over there. But also pleased to report that our portfolio in France is now around 300 megawatts, so it's roughly 50 megawatt addition since last year. The idea is to have one or two projects available for RFP, and basically we want to have a continuous evolution of one, two, perhaps eventually three projects per year. France is a project, not a project, an area that we want to spend a lot of energy, and the team is becoming more and more efficient. And we're hopeful that next year we'll have one or two projects to be permitted. Development opportunity in Chile. We want to develop and continue developing the hydro. The idea over there is to develop a portfolio, a mix of hydro, solar, wind, and eventually also battery. I think Chile is a perfect place to install battery, given the fact that a lot of solar will be present in the future in Chile, and solar slash with battery, just like we're doing in Hawaii, would be very, I think, would be competitive in Chile. So that this is also a big part of our development in Chile. I'd like to mention also the two acquisitions that we had mentioned when we announced the strategic alliance with Hydro-Québec has been put on hold while we were finalizing the financing with Hillcrest. We wanted to be prudent in making sure that the financing of Hillcrest would have been put together before extending and spending the capital into new acquisitions, so we wanted to be prudent. Of course, when the crisis came out and some bad news regarding the economy was were basically announced, we just wanted to be cautious with our liquidity. I think now that the Fed and the Bank of Canada and the government are helping a lot with liquidity, I think that things have come down a little bit and we have more clarity. So we have re-engaged with the sellers, and we are quite advanced in our negotiation and due diligence. So we should be in a position to conclude these acquisition in a very short period of time. If we go back to the strategy, the 2020 and 2025 strategy plan, we basically have had a consultation also with our employees. I think it was important to have them commit also and provide some ideas in our business. But the biggest conclusion is that we're not reinventing ourselves in the sense that we're still committed to be a renewable energy company. We want to stay into the same principle that have created the success of Innergex. But we want to evolve and we want to embrace innovation. And I would say that storage and also the ability to communicate with corporate customer is very important, and it will be a big part of our future effort for development. And when I say that, I say basically going into managing capacity, storage for a part of grids that might be weak, or help stabilize some grids. And on that aspect, we're very, very fortunate to have Hydro-Québec a huge expertise in that field, and we love to be able to take advantage of these expertise where in the past Synergex didn't have the that knowledge of managing a grid or a smaller utility. So given the vast experience of Hydro-Québec, I think we will be able to be even better in that area, and also being able to help a big industrial customer to manage their energy by potentially having behind the meter some batteries and some software to manage their electricity might be also a very interesting and growing segment of our businesses. Of course, we want to grow, and we've been growing, but we want to do it responsibly, and we want also to continue diversify our activity. So we want to have a portfolio of mixed technology. We love hydro, wind, and solar, and now batteries, and we want to make sure that we have a very well-balanced portfolio throughout diversification of both location and technology. And we want to embrace also innovation, but innovation is not only for R&D. Innovation is also part of the day-to-day work in our operation. We want to entice our people to get more innovative in the way we are doing our businesses. And the COVID-19 is a good example of being innovative and being able to create some work from home and being able to work with team and communicate efficiently. So these little things are eventually going to produce, I think, a better and a more efficient way to do business in the future. So also in order to measure our success, we are changing a little bit the way we are going to give some guidance in our growth. Of course, megawatt will still be interesting and will report on the megawatt installed, but given the fact that we want also to have a lot of storage and batteries, then suddenly some part of our business will no longer be measured by megawatts or megawatt hours in the same way. So, of course, we want to grow our EBITDA, and we're maintaining a growth of about 10%. That 10% EBITDA will have to be translated also by cash flow and accretion of cash flow per share as well. And, of course, the board will be and the management will be focusing on that creation of value as well. We're still committed to create value in terms of total return for our investors. We always said that in our business, we want to create a spread over the Canadian bond, or the U.S. bond, depending on how much proportion we would have in the U.S. So we're really mindful of that spread, and I always said that we want to create some value, some spread around 600 to 800 basis points, depending on the risk profile of our project and also on the market. As you've seen in the last few months, the spread on the corporate bond have moved from 200 basis points prior the crisis to a peak of 450 or close to 500. It's now back to 350 or something. So we're mindful of that. Of course, it's giving us some ideas on where the market is in terms of potential return. So we always have that in mind as well. And in 2025, if we look back and we put ourselves in that position, I'd be happy if we would have developed a lot more storage capacity, that we would have a few more good long-term corporate customer. We would have expanded a little bit in market in the neighborhood of where we are actually present, meaning Chile. We're in Chile, but love to be present also in Peru and perhaps Colombia. And in Europe, we're very present in France, but that doesn't mean we can expand in Europe in a few neighboring countries. So basically the same philosophy, long-term investment philosophy, also supported by our 3P philosophy as well as sustainable development, and create value for our shareholder on a long-term basis and being a good corporate citizen. So on that, I would open the question period.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Sean Stewart from TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for all the detailed
Hello,
comments.
Sean.
Question on storage as it becomes a larger piece of the overall strategy. Michelle, can you comment on the economics and returns on storage investments versus traditional renewable development opportunities? And as you think ahead to 2025, what percentage of your overall mix do you think storage could be at that point?
Well, it's storage. It will depend on different. There's many opportunity in storage. You could try to do storage by taking risk on the volatility on the energy during the day period and the night, and so this part might be a little bit more risky. Enhance return should be higher, but what we want to also to have is a mix of long-term contract and long-term commitment. Like Hawaii, we get to have 25 years commitment from the utility, and they're paying us on capacity basically, and so we have an annual payment that is obviously paid on a monthly basis. So those segment of the business will be very close to the business that we have been successful in the past, in a sense that we're answering RFP, we're providing a service, and we're getting paid for it. Of course, for 25 years contract and having this security, return is going to be lower than the project that you would install a battery in a certain area, hoping to make the arbitrage between the daily volatility. So I don't see storage being very different in terms of return than the conventional business that we were in the past. And of course, we will have our partner, Hydro-Quebec, has a battery that they're developing, and I think that battery is very good and will be very useful. And we'll try to also take Hydro-Quebec expertise namely in the Northeast. That might be a good opportunity also. Hydro-Québec is being able to trade a lot in this area and have a big and fine knowledge on the need to have battery in certain area in the Northeast. So these are type of opportunity we're looking. In Chile, it's just that in Chile, if we want to sign and be in a position to offer a long-term contract to corporate off-taker, we have to have the means in order to produce the electricity. And of course, solar will be a big, I would say a big segment, a big growing segment in Chile. But what are you doing during the evening if you only have solar in your portfolio? So having a mix of hydro that has some storage capacity coupled with battery would provide us the tool to have a package being offered to corporate off-taker. And it'd be difficult to single out the return on the battery because it would be a portfolio approach, and each of the component would help provide the full services. But I don't think that we would be looking into different return. I always said that in our portfolio, if we're making an acquisition of a mature asset that is very very well built and good long-term asset, the return, the expectation of a return, except for special equation or in the middle of a crisis, is supposed to be, probably the lowest return. And theoretically, you would make the best return on your greenfield project that you're developing. So we always see that as a mix. And the ultimate game is to provide this spread over the Canadian bond of 600 to 800 basis points. So your question is a good one because it's beginning. The storage is pretty new, and there's few historical return, and you guys are trying to figure out what is the profitability of that sector. But what I'm saying to you is that I don't think it'll be very different from our businesses. Of course, some big utility might want to have a specific call for one battery in one location, and this is basically almost a call on supplying specific equipment. Those might be a lower type of return, but those might not be necessarily the one that we would be seeking. So we want to create value by bringing the storage, and we're not just selling a battery. We're trying to sell also a product and that create a little bit more value added to the electrons.
That's great detail. Thank you. Second question I have is with respect to the solar in the U.S. beyond Hillcrest, the 200 megawatts a year you're targeting in Texas and PJM. It seems like tax equity access to that capital pool has not been compromised by COVID-19. Hoping you can provide a little bit of detail there and just your thoughts on the general contracting environment for near-term solar development opportunities in the U.S., how that looks.
Yeah, that's it's difficult to make a long-term forecast for what the COVID-19 will have as a full potential impact. But so far, you're right. We've had some very good relationship with tax equity provider, and they've been supporting us through the financing of Hillcrest. We're in direct contact with them in order to secure future commitment for other project. So far, I think that there's maybe a few smaller player that will struggle to keep up the same pace as last year. So I think there will be perhaps a little bit of scarcity in the tax or uncertainty in the next few months, I guess, before people get to have a better handle on the ultimate impact of this crisis. But so far, we're still confident, and of course, we have been able to provide a good project and good execution. And so I think it's important in the way people will be selecting project and promoter in the future. As far as the price, in Texas, we might see some softening on the price because of the demand might slow down a little bit. And hence our desire also to be very active in PGM, where I think demand can be soft, but on the long run, I think that those area will be very favorable for renewable energy, and solar is very, very popular. So I'm still positive on the U.S. Like I said, everybody I think is a little bit cautious on how fast the economy will recover, and hence how fast the demand will recover. But remember that solar and renewable energy are more linked into switching from the coal or the nuclear, also decommissioning. So even if the demand is slow, in some cases it may even accelerated the closure of non-very efficient coal facility that might not even be able to compete anymore, and hence create a little bit more room for solar and wind to be present. So I know that I'm not answering exactly your question, but I'm trying to tell you that we're still confident, and we're seeing a lot of interest for these potential project in the States.
That's useful. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. Just to follow up on hi, can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. Just to follow up on Sean's question in terms of the developments in the U.S. Could you just clarify, did you say there's two sites that are about 100 megawatts each for solar in Pennsylvania, or were you saying they're kind of spread across Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Texas?
We have one in PGM and one in Ohio, and we have three in Texas. I think we've talked about Texas. So in Texas, we already have almost 600 megawatt worth of development. That doesn't mean that we will develop them all. But we were, like I said, we were focusing on PGM, and PGM include Pennsylvania and in Ohio. Because we want to be diversified, I'm mentioning it often. We like Texas in the sense that I think we have a good team there that can develop project and we can build project. But at some point in time, we want to have some limitation on exposure on different market. And hence, if we develop this project, we might sell some that have been in advanced development, or we can divest some of our existing one by having a financial partner. So we like Texas, and I think we'll be successful in Texas in the sense that we already have enough project in our development pipeline. So we want to make sure that we also have other area. Another area of interest in the States is the Northwest part, and potentially partnering with some First Nation entity in that area. So we want to make sure that we have other a good diversification also in the United States.
Okay, and this is mainly solar and not wind, right? Or are you looking at both? I'm just wondering whether the that potential 1 year extension to the safe harbor would actually change anything for you.
No, that's a good point. we have Griffin Trail, which if you remember, we were developing Griffin Trail at the same time as Fort City, and at some point in time we decided to slow down on the development of Griffin Trail. But we had continued the development on Griffin Trail. It's a project that is a little bit south of Fort City, very close to Fort City. And we were pretty confident that the extension of the PTC for 1 year would apply for Griffin Trail, and we would be 100% PTC qualified. So suddenly Griffin Trail has revived in a way in our priority, and we're continuing developing it and trying to secure the tax equity and access to the grid. We would have to make some decision on interconnection investment by the middle of the summer. So Griffin Trail would benefit greatly from the PTC extension. And in the Northwest, we might be looking also for wind. But in PJM in Ohio, we were more focusing on solar.
Okay. And then in terms of your arrangement with Hydro-Québec, should we assume that most of these new developments would be on a 50-50 basis? Like, how should we think about the your net interest in a lot of these developments going forward?
Well, as we mentioned, everything that we had under development prior to the strategic were not part of the partnership, but we have the option to welcome Hydro-Québec in those. So we will be trying to invite Hydro-Québec in most of our development. Obviously, it'd be nice if we could consolidate some, because obviously the proportionate EBITDA, we're thankful with you guys. You're doing a great job trying to figure out these distinctions between projects that where we can consolidate and some that we have on a pro rata basis. But of course, it's always easier if we can consolidate. So those are going to be implied some discussion with Hydro-Québec. But yeah, of course, if we can partner with Hydro-Québec in future projects, we'll be very happy to have them in.
Okay, and then just one last question. Just wanted to go back to battery storage. When you look at these projects that have a 25-year contract, what's your assumed battery life in some of these projects? And I presume you're assuming it's lithium ion rather than some other new technology, because you mentioned Hydro-Québec.
The initial one were bid with Tesla technology, and Tesla had committed to supply the O&M and have a guaranteed of 25 years, not necessarily on each of the cell, but in their total cost of O&M, they were replacing cell to have the project being able to deliver and face the obligation under the contract for 25 years. So it was part of the O&M contract to support this 25 years. So we will be discussing this same topic with Hydro-Québec, obviously, for a future project that would have that long of a contract as well.
Okay, thanks. I'll go back in the queue.
Good.
Your next question comes from David Quezada from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Hello, David.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My first question here, just on, I guess, switching over to France. I know they released their 2030 national plan recently. Wondering if you see any implications for your business there. And then maybe while we're on the topic, your thoughts on offshore wind in France.
Yeah. Well, I think that we are focusing right now on onshore. I think there's still a lot of potential in France on offshore, onshore, It's, of course, complicated. We said it all along. A full process in France can take at least 5 years from first negotiation with landowner to full permitting, and then you have 1 year of potential claim that the proponent can have. So it's a long process, and the project are not that big because just the land constraint in France is giving some restriction on having big project. So this is basically the less positive access in France is that takes a long time to develop them, and they're not that big of a project. But we think that they're providing good margin, and that you can have a certain certainty on the future demand for such a project over time. So we like France on that aspect. Offshore wind is something that is definitely going to be providing big volume for France and perhaps many places around the world. We have yet to be convinced that return versus the risk is appropriate. So we're still on the sidetrack for the time being. But we'll be discussing with Hydro-Québec and perhaps other players if a future joint venture to be exposed in the offshore might be possible in the next few years. But for the time being, it's not a priority.
Okay, that's good detail. Thank you. And then maybe switching back to the U.S., given the fair number of projects that you're advancing there, do you have any thoughts on corporate PPA demand or just the availability of offtake or power hedge agreements, I guess particularly in light of the current environment?
Yeah. We're still assessing these. Of course, we're also thinking of potentially having some of our own synthetic PPA in the sense that it could be a mix of a hedge and perhaps some kind of a reserve, internal reserve to mimic a PPA, because a lot of the tax equity requires to have a hedge or a corporate PPA. When you can have a good corporate PPA, that works, but sometimes it's a little bit more difficult in some areas. And when you're making the risk analysis, sometimes it's perhaps counterintuitive to fixing at a very low price. You know, the tax equity are basically looking to make sure that the plant has enough revenue to operate, because they're making their return on the PTC. And the PTC, you know, if we just go back, it's about 2.5 cents per kilowatt hours. And sometimes the market, especially for wind in different area, can be as low as 1.5, 1.6, and even 1.4 cents per kilowatt hour. That basically is the goal is to cover the operating cost of the project, to make sure that you're producing and hence they get the 2.5 cents. But when you're reconsidering the risk profile that basically this strategy or this obligation is forcing on the project, it's a little bit silly, because you know most of the time the merchant price are over 2 cents. And yeah, sometimes they can go as low as you know, it can be turning negative. But if you look at the profile of and the probability of having a better price than 1.5 cents or 1.4 cents, it's quite high. So we're initiating some discussion with tax equity and perhaps with our partner on how can we basically secure tax equity with enough reserve, internal reserve, and perhaps being exposed to a little bit more merchant in those places, given the fact that 2.5 cents PTC represent more sometimes than 60-65% of the total revenue of the project. So, you know, we have a little bit of a reflection on those.
Great. Thank you very much for those thoughts. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Mark Jarvi from CIBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone.
Hello, Mark.
Hey. On the storage, is that something that will be done all through organic development, or do you see an opportunity around some M&A to accelerate the efforts on storage?
That's a good question, Mark. Of course, Hydro-Québec wants to deploy their battery, and so far they're still advancing and they're getting really close to have their commercial and manufacturing capabilities. So if we want to accelerate and have a meaningful investment, we might be looking to take advantage of a small team that would have developed some good opportunities. That can be a strategy as well.
Okay. And then maybe this question for JF. What's the cash flow profile look like for Hillcrest now that you had the financing in place? And just maybe clarify what repercussions there would be if for some reason there's issue with because of COVID on getting the project done by year end. What are sort of the repercussions back to INE on that?
So, Mark, the cash flow profile is similar in any tax equity. So we would look at a more back-ended, again, cash on cash. So the cash flow profile we provided into the MD&A on an average for the first 5 years, we provided the figures on an average $10 million U.S. EBITDA, if I'm correct. So we provide I'll guide you to the right page. So it's on page 13 of the MD&A. So we're providing some guidance on the average first 5 years of the project. So obviously the cash payback is over a 10-year period on that because of the profile of the tax equity. Now your second question is part of the tax equity bridge loan. So I'm not sure I got your question correct, but everything with the bridge loan, tax equity financing, and the has been put in place. So security in that regard has been put in place as well. So I'm not sure I'm getting your question
Mark,
right.
If your question is that if we're delayed, I think the most important delay is to make sure that we have the first 20% ITC commitment and pay down. For the first online of block one, which is supposed to be online by July, August, and we have until October as a kind of a more strict date for the tax equity to commit. So our exposure is more likely to be of something of a very meaningful stoppage on the COVID-19, because as we are planning right now, I think that the block one should be in place by July, so we would have a 3 months buffer, which seems to be very conservative given the fact that the project is advancing very well right now, and Ohio governor has reopened the states for construction, and we are also considered as an essential services even for construction. So I'm pretty confident that we're not very exposed to that that limitation or potential liability on tax equity.
That's great, Michelle. That's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Rupert Merer from National Bank. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
With the two acquisitions that you're looking to close, are the deal terms the same as what you were looking at before the market downturn, or have you seen any opportunities to improve economics either through the asset cost or cost of financing?
That's a good question. One, we did, and the other one we were not so successful. Well, a very small modification. We haven't seen the desperate seller just yet, Rupert. And of course, our business is fairly resilient, and operating assets that have long-term PPA. Haven't seen yet some very depressed selling price. We'll see, I guess, down the road how things are going to evolve. So that's why we were prudent also in deploying the capital. So we want to still have some capital to deploy if things are getting more interesting in terms of total return on potential acquisition. And that's why also we might have slowed down the reimbursement of an existing loan, what we call the AMP loan. And we had also a penalty to pay for reimbursing a little bit in advance. And we decided to keep our liquidity just to be a little bit more flexible if a good opportunity is coming up instead of just reimbursing an existing loan.
So what would you say is your liquidity position today?
Right now we have, GF, we have, well,
let me look at it.
Almost
500 million close as excess cash, yes.
Yeah, over 500, and we have, as of today, we have almost finalized the equity contribution on Hillcrest. So Jean-François was referring to our investment of a little bit over $80 million of equity, and I think we have almost
77 of that has already been funded, and I mean the next 10 will be funded by the end of May. So we have Rupert as that month of May about $500 million under the revolver, and this is excluding, Michel, the cash on hand we have in U.S.
So we have more than $600 million on hand and available. So we're pretty flexible right now.
Okay, great. And then secondly, I understand that you've seen very little impact from COVID and your assets are almost fully contracted. But we see some reports that BC Hydro is looking to deal with excess power because of low demand at this point. And they've highlighted that they plan to invoke some contract provisions with certain IPPs to reduce power purchases. Have they approached you, and are there any provisions in your contracts in BC or anywhere else where you may see curtailment, either paid or unpaid?
That's a very, very good question, Rupert. Yeah, BC Hydro has been aggressively, communicating this to the industry. But, you know, our internal legal department and also our external have reviewed our contract in BC, and we are on the opinion that even if it's a force majeure, the lack of demand is a specific exclusion in those contracts. So they have the ability to curtail us, and they did in the past in the Frechette, but that curtailment, the electricity that we would have been producing is deemed available and therefore being payable as well. So that's our position in BC. In Quebec and the other places, it's less clear, but so far Hydro-Québec has been hit probably less than BC Hydro. Hydro-Québec was referring to something around 5% decrease in demand, where BC is claiming 10. I don't know where these numbers stand for that lower demand in BC, but I think that from our legal opinion, we think we're protected. That doesn't mean that BC Hydro might not try, but we intend to defend this point very strongly.
Great. Thanks for the color.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Dhaliwal from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys. Just one question for me here. Just on the payout ratio, on the Q4 call, you had mentioned that with these two pending acquisitions, with completion, it would take you into a range close to 90%, maybe below 90%. I was just wondering if the delayed acquisitions are playing into lowering the payout ratio, and just generally, if you could share any other comments on plans for bringing it lower.
You know, that's a very good point. When we announced Hydro-Québec, it's true that we said that we would be in a position to have a payout ratio at the end of the year below 100%. Of course, that will be a little bit more challenging because the first quarter was not that great, of course, so that's not helping, but that's weather related. So we don't know how the other three quarters will unfold. I'm encouraged that we see a beginning of May in BC being pretty strong. So that's and I'm happy given the fact that the first quarter in BC was very weak. The other thing is, of course, if we conclude the acquisition, hopefully by June or something in that neighborhood, we would have less contribution to those two acquisitions. We also had said that with the AAP loan was quite accretive. We can still do it from June and on. We would not have the make-whole payment provision. But again, it's a two, 3 months less accretion. So, but all in all, I think that if you're looking forward the next 12 months, these acquisitions will have been also accretive, and then 2021 will be easier to be in a better position in payout ratio. But nothing has changed in terms of our business. It's just the timing of those acquisitions might be proved to be a little bit more challenging in terms of reducing the payout ratio, given the fact that we had delayed them.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
All right.
Your last question comes from Naji Baboon from Industrial Alliance Securities. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering if you can give us an update on the Frontera project. What are the next milestones and the timelines for NFID on that?
We said all along that financing was a little bit of a challenge, and given the fact that we're in the middle of COVID-19, it is not helping. We have the option to start the interconnection, which is, I would say, a very good asset, because there's a lot of wind also developer that would love to have access to that interconnection point that we have secured. And that would provide us the opportunity to delay the project for a full year and keep the permitting intact. So that might give us a little bit more flexibility. We are also taking the advantage of the slow economy in Chile to some degree in terms of construction to further negotiate the balance of plant construction. And we're having some success in terms of reducing the price. So it's really really depending on the type of financing we can get. And I would say that the decision is pending in Q3 of this year if we go ahead at full construction, or we try to maintain our permitting position and perhaps delay the decision by early next year.
Yes, that's good. Maybe just going back to Hawaii, are there more proposals that are due later this year for other islands, and are you participating in that process?
I'm not aware that this is the timing exactly, but we are definitely still working on securing other land, and we have also the ability to recycle the two projects that were not selected in the RFP. But I'm sorry, we could provide you the exact timing for the next RFP, but there will be some future one, and that's why we like also Hawaii, is that there's a repeat RFP that enable us to potentially refile or recycle project that we would have partially developed to prior RFPs.
Okay, that's helpful. Just maybe one last question on the your strategic plan for 2025 and your financial targets. I just want to clarify 2 points. Is the adjusted EBITDA proportionate growth target of 10% a year, is that off of 2019 or 2020? And how much of that growth do you expect to come from organic developments versus M&A?
It's a good. That one is tough. You know, we in the past we've of course acquisition is quicker, and but it can be a little bit more challenging in terms of return. You know, my best guess would be you know, I'd be happier if we could develop more organically, let's say 60% and 40% from acquisition. But it all depends, right? If the market suddenly becomes more attractive in terms of return on existing asset, we might take advantage of that and being opportunistic in those. And but we, like I said, we stick to our plan of creating value. And like I said in the last few calls, I think that you should be giving us the benefit of the doubt when we announce one particular transaction or one particular acquisition. We always try to see it as a whole and potentially as an addition to the portfolio. You know, if I take Chile and we buy one asset, you could say, well, doesn't make a lot of sense, that particular asset, but if you couple it with potentially another asset that we have or we're developing, then suddenly, as a whole, it makes a lot more sense. So, but we'll still be opportunistic, and the idea is to create value. And sometimes, like I said, if we're developing, especially in the States, if we want to counter the effect of the PTC back-ended cash yield, perhaps making an acquisition that may have a little bit less return but a higher cash yield in the first few years. If you put them together, then suddenly you have a better cash profile, and that helps the payout ratio and stabilize the total cash flow of the company. So difficult to answer your question. We just want to make sure that we stay disciplined, and any transaction that we're making, we will be thinking about the total effect on the portfolio. And one of the goals is to reduce the payout ratio. We think that we have an opportunity to reduce it. And but we want to still create long-term value. We don't want to be investing on a lot of projects that have short lives and high payout ratio, not high payout ratio, but high cash yield at the beginning and no value, no future value. This is not what we want to do. We want to have a real balanced portfolio that is sustainable on a long-term basis.
That's great. Thank you for the details.
My pleasure.
We have no further questions. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters for closing remarks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And like I said, I thank you all. And I thank all the analysts. You guys have produced your report late last night. So sorry for the late delay. And again, for all of our investors and employees, thank you for your support. In this time of crisis, we need your support. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.